But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with you this Sunday morning with co-host and producer Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning, Tom. Love is in the air.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, big day coming up tomorrow, huh?
Yes. And it seems like it's been a celebration since Thursday night. I know that people have started to do restaurant reservations for Valentine's Day Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday and Sunday, and up till Monday.
Yeah, it's one of those days where if you if you don't go out to dinner, you lose your membership to the boyfriend society or the husband and wife society, whatever it is. It's a big day for restaurants. It's actually probably, if not the busiest day, it's one of the two busiest days of the year. That the other being Mother's Day, you know, and we all know why that's busy. But it's a crazy day in the restaurant business, and we've gotten so crazy that sometimes we had to actually cut new tables because we didn't have enough two tops, you know, four tops. And six tops kind of getting away on Valentine's Day because most of the reservations are two at a time. You get an occasional six top, and that's usually old married couples that aren't so much into the romance of it, but more into the going out with friends or whatever. But for the most part, it's two tops, and we get a lot of deuces and have to accommodate that way. That's the bad news. The good news is you're able to turn them over a little quicker because two tops go faster than four tops and six tops. You know, you can serve them in a more timely manner. It's not as much complicating issues going on. There's not as much, talking and trying to get the order, and it's a little harder with a six top or an eight top. So anyway, but it's a good day, and it's great when it comes on a Monday because it actually gives you two very busy days of the week rather than one or three rather than two. You know, in Long Island or the suburbs in general, we do 50% of our business in 2 days, on Saturday, Friday and Saturday. So this gives you almost like an extra Saturday night in a week, which is helpful, you know.
So here's a question for you. I know that, just like you said, there's tables for two,
mm-hmm.
and then there's tables for four. Sometimes even the tables for four expand to tables for six.
Yep.
Because there's a bracket and they turn into round.
Yeah.
But many times the table for two is a little cramped for me. I mean, I'll go there with Carrie, and I've talked about it before. We do small plates and share, and I'd rather have a table for four. I do understand that the footprint, if you could put six where a two is, it's more profitable for you.
Yeah.
So I think I have consideration. If I walk in and the restaurant's packed,
sure,
I'm not going to even ask.
Yeah.
But if it's open, I might ask. But I don't know really how that affects the service staff, because maybe there's a certain amount of seats that's promised to a server each night. And if I'm in a four and it's really for two, does she or he get hurt?
No, it goes more by how many people you're serving in the course of an evening. But I'll tell you a funny story about that. When I had a restaurant in Montauk for years, you know, and Montauk being an outdoor society, everybody's kind of, outside playing, most of the day. So they're either at the beach or they're fishing or they're playing golf or they're surfing or whatever's going on. Excuse me. So you don't really get busy until about 7:30 by the time everybody gets in and showered and changed and plans are made or whatever. So it usually starts a little later in Montauk in the summer. So this was the case. It was an August night, right? And we had like 300 reservations on the books. And they started pretty much at 7:15. And we had a couple come in at 6 o'clock or 6:15, whatever it was. And they said to the hostess, can we get a table of two? And the hostess starts burying her head in the reservation book, looking around and trying to figure it out. Now, the guy's looking at this completely empty dining room, thinking, what's the problem, right? So she said to him, look, sir, I have a bunch of reservations coming in at 7:15. If you can promise me you can eat within like an hour and 15 minutes, I can give you a table. If not, we'll have to do another time. Yeah, no problem. We can eat in a hurry. We got plans. We're going here, there, whatever. So anyway, she takes him to the table, right? I don't want to sit here. Takes him to a second table. I don't want to sit there. Third table. Same. She finally says, sir, where would you like to sit? So he points to a table of four, just what you were saying. He's two people, right? He said, I'd like to sit over there. I'm a big guy. I'm not going to be comfortable at this small table. So she says, well, sir, the problem is it's a table of four. You're a table of two. I can't really give up the seat. So he's looking around at this still empty dining room going, what's the problem? There's nobody here. She goes, I know what you think, but, you know, in another hour it's going to be busy. Out of here. So they're talking back and forth, and they're back at the hostess stand negotiating over this table, right? And I just happened to come out of the kitchen to see, you know, how many people I had on the books for that night. And I hear what's going on. So I said to him, what's the problem? He goes, well, I'm a big guy. She's trying to get me to sit at a table of two. I won't be comfortable. I'd rather have a table of four. I said, sir, well, the problem is here, this is Montauk in August, right? So essentially, this is a real estate transaction. It just happens to come with a meal. I'm selling square footage out here. I can't really give up two extra seats, you know. Certainly, you can understand. I said, you know, if you want to sit at a table of four for two people, come back in October, you can sit at a table of 12. I don't care. You know, this is only here. So he looks at me straight in the eye and he goes, let me tell you something, pal. I know Tom Shortell, and when I tell him what's going on out here, heads are going to roll, right? So I'm looking at this guy, what? So the hostess grabs her nose and runs inside and leaves me with this lunatic, right? So I said, you know Tom? Years I go back with him. And I'm telling you, when I tell him your job's on the line, he's making all kinds of threats, right? So I just looked at him and said, all right, sit where you want. I know what to say, right? So he sits at the table of four, mucks up the entire reservation system for the night. And hostess says to me, why didn't you say something? I said, well, the guy said he knew me. He was going to call me and have me fire me. That's a lot to process. I couldn't really get it together in time, you know?
That's one of my favorite stories. I can't begin to tell you how many times I recanted to people. It's
there's no shortage of talent out there. It's amazing. But, you know, I was in this situation last night. I went to a place called Iberico that an old friend of mine opened up in, I guess it's St. James.
Okay.
And
you go east.
I go everywhere. You know, I go anywhere for food. I'm that guy that's going to be sitting under the bridge. You know, we'll work for food kind of thing. Anyway, this place just opened up, I guess, in December. And it used to be a small little Italian restaurant, pasta kind of pizza place. And so his name is Jake Purdy. And Jake was, I met Jake when he was working at Jamesport Vineyards out east. He worked for Ron out there, Ron Gerler. And he left and he went to Fire Island, opened up a liquor wine shop on Fire Island, and I believe in Kismet. And he has a little wine bar there that's attached. Very cool little operation. So anyway, he came over to the mainland and decided to do this little Iberico restaurant. Now, his wife's from Cuba, and she had lived in Spain for a long time. So they have this affinity for those little Spanish tapas bars, you know. And there's not many of them out here. You have Salumi. Plancha. Yeah, Plancha's the other one that they own in Garden City. And I think there may be one or two more, one in Rockville Center, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember the name of it. Anyway, but they weren't happy with the food that they were getting, so they decided to do it on their own. I got to tell you, I went there last night. It was funny. Jean wanted to hate it, you know, in a way. I don't want to go. I mean, can't we go someplace closer? She gave me a lot of time. I know I'm not going to like it. Oh, here we go. Anyway, so it turns out it was fabulous, right? So we get there, and he gives us I hadn't seen him in a long time, so we're reminiscing, and he gives me this plate of Iberico ham. You know, the difference between, like, Serrano ham, which is, it's like prosciutto. Think prosciutto.
I was
right?
just going to say, my mind goes to prosciutto.
Yeah. But Iberico is a certain kind of pork. It's a certain kind of pig that's raised on acorns. And it's very pricey. It's very expensive. And anyway, it's fabulous. It has a nutty, you can almost taste the acorns in it, the way it was raised and what it was fed. I guess you are what you eat, as they say, you know. But so he sent over a plate of that, which was phenomenal. And then we had a bunch of, I always order too much. We had a bunch of, I had a meatballs that were killer. What else did we have? We had a phone. We had meatballs. What else was there? We had piquillo peppers stuffed with oxtail, which was great. A little scallop thing, which was super. We had patatas bravas, which is the potatoes with the aioli, you know.
Oh, wow.
They were really good. He sent over a bunch of stuff, and then he sent out dessert. He opened a bottle of 2007 Rioja, which was just smoking good. I mean, it was as good a red wine as I've had in a long time.
What are other similar wines to a Rioja?
A Rioja is made with Tempranillo, the grape Tempranillo. I don't know. Chianti, I guess, is the closest I can get to that. You know, Sangiovese.
So that's interesting. So almost like a Spanish Chianti.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, okay. Kind of like that. You know, acid in. But I tell you, when they're done well and they're aged, they're gorgeous wines. And this thing was just, in fact, I went home and looked up, you know, where he got it from. And so now I have a case on the way, as they say. And Just a great experience. I couldn't say enough good things about it to Jake when I left. I thought the whole thing was phenomenal. But getting back to your earlier point, they were fully booked when I got there. We didn't have a reservation. We just walked in. So there's a little table in the kind of like in the aisle when you walk in. And he says, you know, I have that. If you want to, you know, stay, you can have that table. We don't care. Yeah, fine. Okay. But the table was the size of a quarter, you know. I mean, and trying to get all these things down, it was just, it was craziness. But super restaurant if you're ever in that area.
And what was the name again?
It's called Iberico, like the ham. And it's just very well done. You know, it's funny because there was a restaurant in Stony Brook called Pentimento. And he was friends with the owner, and Pentimento lost their lease. And they were thinking about taking this place, but I think it was too small, so they decided to retire. So Jake wound up getting some servers and some cooks that were originally in Pentimento in Stony Brook. So it turns out that he kind of sidestepped the hardest part of our business, which is trying to find help at this point, you know. So he has a full kitchen crew. They did just a fabulous job last night. I couldn't say enough good things about the restaurant. And I told him, you know, that... you know, we do this little radio show every once in a while here in Farmingdale. And, you know, so he's going to come on maybe next week or the week after and talk
about
how it all happened, talk about his place in Fire Island. So it should be a lot of fun, you know. Anyway, before we get into Valentine's Day, which is what I'm supposed to talk about today, right?
Yes.
Because you yelled at me for not doing that for the last couple of years. And I had a little bit of a party last weekend. I don't know if I told you what was going on.
No, and I want to, maybe that will lead into, you mentioned something, I think it was with Macari Vineyards that you're doing, but let's take one at a time.
Okay, one at a time. Well, I had a friend, a very good friend, come down from upstate. He lives up in Westchester, and he has some friends here on the island. So there were two couples, they came down, and they wanted to do a wine weekend. So who did they call? They called me, and they said, you know, can you set us up? And join us with a couple of maybe vineyards and some restaurants. We're going to come down. We're going to stay for 3 days. And he goes, you know, I have a lot of points for Marriott, you know. He says, so we're going to stay in a hotel. Would you like to stay in the hotel with us? And the choice was either stay in the hotel or stay in the house with my grandkids. And, you know, I love my grandkids, but every once in a while you need a break, right? So I said, oh, you know what, I'll do that. I'll stay in a hotel with you guys. It was great. So there's a Marriott Residence Inn on the main road out there, you know, just as you get off the expressway, the final exit on the expressway gets you on Route 58, like County Road 58 or whatever, right across from Tanger Mall. So we stayed there, and the first night, we had a couple. He brought up a case of wine that he had in his cellar, all different bottles of interesting stuff. I brought a half a case, just because we didn't think a case was enough, which was kind of patently ridiculous, but anyway. And the other guy brought a couple of bottles of wine. He's not a big wine drinker. Anyway, so we had a bottle of champagne, and it was great because we had a designated driver. One of the guy's wives doesn't drink much. So we went to Amano for dinner, you know. And I'm always not worried, but you're always on edge, you know, taking friends to your own place. You know, we're praying everything goes right, and, you know, you're at the mercy. You know, it's like a chain. You know, you're as strong as the weakest link. You're always at the mercy of your employees. And I got to tell you, and I'm the first one to criticize my own places. They did a stellar job. I mean, the food was fabulous. And everybody was very happy, and, you know, I was relieved.
What does Tom Shawdell serve, Tom Shawdell?
Yeah, well, I kind of go for specials because I'm looking for successes and or slash flaws in the thinking of my cooks. So, but, you know, I had a great horseradish crusted salmon with like a sweet potato puree and some... sauteed zucchini and stuff. It was really good. If I do say so myself, I had nothing to do with it, but it was great. So then the next day we decided we were going to start at Jamesport Winery, which has a pizza oven in it, and it's like a side business there. It's called the Little Oak Kitchen. And I got to tell you, if anybody wants great pizza, this is the best pizza I've had on Long Island. And what they do is they do a real, as they say in Italy, the Napolitan version the Neapolitan pizzas.
Does that mean like a thin crust?
Yeah, it's a thinner crust, but it's also you need to be certified. You got to go to like pizza making school or whatever. And I was offered that, you know, certification, but I had to go to school. I mean, I know how to do it. You know, it's like I don't need a diploma. I've been at it a long time. But the key is the heat of the oven And the hydration of the dough. And people don't pay enough attention to that. So you have Ronnie has a wood-burning oven out there that gets to about 1,000 degrees, which is smoking hot. So you need to hydrate the dough for that, you know, because if you don't have enough hydration, that water evaporates too quickly and you get this dry, you know, cracker-like crust. You know, it's almost like matzo pizza, you know. You don't want to have that, right? So they do like a 65, 66% hydration level with their dough, which is good. And you also, if you want to have great pizza, you need a very slow fermentation process. Most people just, you know, ferment it for a couple of hours, you know, to watch the balls blow up and, you know, and they make their pizza. Some do it overnight. Really great pizza takes about 3 days at a slow rising rate. And you keep the rising rate slow by keeping the temperature of your refrigerator down. So you want your refrigerator in that 35, 36 degree range. And then you can ferment the dough over a long period of time. Now, if you don't have it there and it's warmer, the dough ferments quicker. And if you don't use it fast enough, it blows up and then it deflates, and then you got to wind up throwing the dough away. Anyway, this is a long-winded explanation just to tell you that the dough was killer. It was just great pizza. He's got about 7 or 8 different types out there. We had some marinated olives, which were fun, and then we ordered these two pizzas. One had like almost like a type of salami, a hotter salami, a soppressata or something on top with a chili-flavored honey, which made it a little zippy, which was great. And the other one of the ladies is a vegetarian, so we had one that had a whole bunch of vegetables on and artichokes, this, that, and the other thing, onions. They were just exemplary pieces of pizza. I mean, it was just, I can't say enough about it. I mean, I had some great experiences this week with food, and that was one of the highlights. Also, I had an old bottle of 2007 Petit Verdot from Jamesport that I've been looking for an excuse to open for a long time, and I wanted to open up with Ron, who owns the vineyard, and he told me he was going to be there. So I surprised him. I brought that bottle down. So we opened up. We had a breakfast Merlot. You know, we first got there around 11:45. And then we ordered the pizzas, because if we didn't, we'd have been walking into walls, you know. And then we opened up this 2007 Petit Verdot, which was just phenomenal. It was drinking well. It had plenty of fruit still left in it, even some tannins. I mean, I think it could have gone another 5 years. And you're talking about, what, 14, 15 years already? For that, maybe 5, 11, 16 years, you know, 17 years now for that wine in the bottle. So it was just a great example of how Long Island wines can age and age wonderfully and not lose any of their starch and just drink as well as a bottle of wine could drink. And then what we had, you know, by the time we got out of there, we had an afternoon appointment at Sparkling Point, which is one of my favorite wineries, you know. They only do sparkling wine. So they went there, and, you know, the owner and the manager know me pretty well, so they kind of sent us all these little things out, you know, tastes of wines that they had in the back that they don't usually use in their tasting. So and then we had a glass of champagne. And then we went back to the hotel, and then we cracked a bottle of champagne at the hotel and had fun with that, and I might have even cracked two, if I remember right. And then we went to the Preston House. Have you ever been there, Preston House?
No, I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's right across the street from the aquarium in Riverhead. And it's a hotel, 5-story hotel. And, you know, boutique hotel. I don't think they have a lot of rooms. Maybe they have 20, 25 rooms, something like that. But they have a beautiful restaurant there, which was packed, actually, the night we got there. It was Saturday night, in honesty. But they really, really fun menu. The chef, I met him on the way out. I told him what a great job he did. I had super interesting ravioli that was stuffed with, like, duck sausage. And, you know, we split a salad.
Here we go again. So now, I understand the pasta with the stuffing.
Right.
What's the sauce that you serve that with?
He had kind of it was an interesting thing. I think it was a red pepper puree because it was really orangey and it had some, like, it tasted like it had some sherry vinegar in it. So it tasted to me like a red pepper puree. I don't remember. I'd have to really look at the menu again to see. But that was my impression. My impression was it was pureed red peppers, onions, whatever. You know, you make that almost like a, not like an aioli, but like a puree. But it did have sherry vinegar in it, and it was fabulous. And so my friend Rob, who was the guy who came down, he was sitting to my left. So he ordered the duck. I ordered the tortelli with the duck sausage, and we split it, you know. So the duck was fabulous. had a great little fruit sauce on it, and I couldn't say enough. I mean, we were at that point, we were 3 for 3. You know, we had a great meal in Amano, we had a great lunch at the dinner at Preston House was fabulous. So then Sunday morning we get up, and I was meandering around. I lost my glasses somewhere Saturday night. Now, you might think it was because I had 17 bottles of wine, but that's not the case. I couldn't find them for the life of me, so I had to go to CVS. So I go to CVS, and we had an appointment at Pominac for a tasting at noon, right? So I don't know if you've ever drunk breakfast Merlot, but it's not easy. I mean, you have to kind of pay attention and get it down. This is the first thing I've had, because I don't eat breakfast, right? So they sent over a...
What makes a breakfast Merlot?
The time of day. And it's the first thing that you ingest.
So it's a regular Merlot.
It's a regular Merlot. It's just served earlier than you would normally have it if you had something to eat, you know, later on. So anyway, we get there, and he sends over a bottle of a glass of sparkling wine, which was sparkling Chenin Blanc. And most of for the last couple of years, they've been making sparkling wine at Pominac, but it's always been Chardonnay, you know. But this was sparkling Chenin Blanc, and it was interesting because it had a completely different flavor profile, and we all liked it. And then you could order one of 3 or 4 tasting flights, you know. So everybody ordered a flight. I had a flight of the higher-end stuff, and they were all drinking what they were drinking. And he came over with a bottle of I should give you some background here. He started making this minimalist Chenin Blanc some years ago. I'm sorry. It started with the Chardonnay, the minimalist Chardonnay.
And I just have to interrupt. But how does Chardonnay differ from Chenin Blanc as far as taste, body, you know, the whole profile?
Chardonnay is more voluptuous. Think Pam Anderson, you know. And Chenin Blanc tends to be a little fruitier and leaner.
Really?
You know, kind of like... Ally McBeal, you know, kind of.
So it's funny. I not being as knowledgeable as you are, I would have thought the Chardonnay was the tamer one.
No. Chardonnay is a big, you know, kind of viscous wine when it's made well. But he made this version called Minimalist, and what we mean by that is that there was no manipulation in the wine. It was all natural yeast. There was no yeast added. No screwing around in the vineyard. It was basically, you know, allowed to barrel ferment. Wasn't filtered. It wasn't fined. So whatever was in the vineyard wound up in the bottle. And it turned out, I remember tasting that against a Consgard, which is a very, very well-regarded, huge, expensive Chardonnay from California. And I actually liked the minimalist Chardonnay better. So anyway, then he started making a minimalist Chenin Blanc, which I thought was kind of cool, but I preferred the other one, the original Chenin Blanc. So I'm getting to the point of my story. I used to say, get to the point, Aunt Pauline, because my Aunt Pauline could meander around like to the point where you forgot what she was talking about. But he came over and he made this minimalist Cabernet Franc. And I got to tell you, it's one of the best wines I've had on North Fork. I wound up buying a case of it just right there on the spot. It was just phenomenal. So if you get out there, just give that a shot, because it's just a beautiful, beautiful wine. And they made us a cheese platter that was the size of a small soccer field. You know, you had to see this cheese platter. So, wow. And I was starving, you know.
So if you did flights, like your flight was, you had the Chenin Blanc, you had the Chardonnay, or it was a bunch of different...
Yeah.
Blancs.
No, they have a different menu for each flight. I mean, some will have a Festival Chardonnay, the Festival Cabernet, Chardonnay, and the Cab Franc, and then one will have all reds and one will be all whites or whatever. Mine was the all upside, the all like the reserve one, the reserve flight.
Reds and whites or just whites?
Just reds.
Just reds.
Yeah. I figured I was already in a pool. I might as well keep swimming, you know. But they sent us out this huge cheese platter that was fabulous. Cheeses on there, and I almost OD'd on the cheese. It was just, there's nothing better.
And when
than
they put together a cheese platter, do they include fruits, or it was just the cheeses, and soft cheeses and hard cheeses?
Yeah, it was both soft and hard. There was a little fruit on there. There was also, you know, some really good bread that was on there. You could smear it on and crackers and stuff like that.
Any like fig jam?
There was
stuff.
A fig jam on there. There was quince paste, you know. So it was just exemplary.
They nailed it.
They did. So after we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you about the second tasting that day, which was McCary, by the way. And we'll take a little break. We're going to talk to our sponsor, and we'll be back.
Yeah, just our listeners should probably listen to the radio spot for our sponsor, Fresh Fin Gourmet. There might be even some stuff that they can still order and have
for Valentine's,
meal.
That's right.
Attention seafood lovers, check out FreshFinGourmet.com. You can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Goulot family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. And it's not just fish. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Try their Italian sausage or veal rib chop. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packaging and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com. Specialty seafood delivered directly to your door with FreshFinGourmet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Yeah, and we're talking about, this little wine trip I did over the weekend, which was an awful lot of fun. I can't tell you how much fun I had. Just, you know, and I'm around the wineries all the time, but everything that was going on out there, it's a great time to go out to the wineries and take a little trip because they're not that crowded at the moment. They're pretty, it's pretty easy to get in. You do need reservations in most of these things now, so I would caution you to make them before you go. They do take some walk-ins here and there, but it's always good to have a reservation. And so I stopped kind of with Sparkling Point and before we went to Pomonac, and I forgot to mention, they have a Blanc de Noir that if you ever get a chance to try it, it's not their Seduction is the one that's a really big one, but the Blanc de Noir, they don't make a lot of it. If you get a chance, try that. It's just phenomenal sparkling wine, and I think it's probably in that $60 or $70 range. It's not inexpensive, but it's not as expensive as a French champagne would be, so give it a shot. Anyway, so the second day after we left Pomonac, we went to McCary, and my daughter's working there part-time, and doing some cakes and stuff for them and working the tasting room because they were looking for people, and she's there on Saturday and Sunday. So if you happen to go to McCary, ask for Courtney and tell her her dad sent you and from the radio show, and I'm sure she'll take good care of you. But anyway, we got there, and it was funny because we had 9 pounds of cheese at Pomonac. You know, and so we get there, and the first thing they do is lay out a cheese platter in front of us. I'm like, oh, no, I'm going to have to double up on my meds to get through this here. You know, but they tasted us out. I had this sparkling Petit Verdot, which was interesting. And Petit Verdot is a red grape, so, you know, you have a sparkling wine that's red. And it was an interesting interesting take on it. I hadn't had sparkling Petit Verdot ever, so it was fun. And we had a ball there. I mean, they tasted out. Their rosé is as good as anything I've ever had, probably the best rosé I've had from Long Island in a long time. And they tasted us out on a 19 Reserve Chardonnay, which was good, and then a 19 Merlot, which was also good. And then I ordered a glass of Syrah, and my friend ordered a glass of Cabernet Franc, and we split those. And both of them were just, I mean, they're doing wonderful things at McCary. So that's another one I can't, I can't talk highly enough about. It was just phenomenal. And so at the end, after the cheese poisoning that we had, you know, I was just OD'd on cheese. We decided that we were going to go lighter for dinner. And I made reservations at Grana. Have you ever been to Grana, the pizza pasta place in Jamesport?
No, I don't get out east much.
You got to get out more. It's a fabulous little place. And it was started by a guy, this guy Dave. Can't think of his last name. He's actually been on the show a couple years ago. But Dave started out making bread as a hobby. in his backyard. He had this little oven back there. He was all screwing around with all kinds of recipes and this, that, and the other thing. He retired, sold his business, had nothing to do, started making bread, and then he got into pizza dough, and this building became available in the middle of Jamesport, and he opened up a pizza place with absolutely no restaurant experience whatsoever, which is probably a good idea because you're not, you know, pre-prejudiced about, you know,
no
what
stress,
to do. No
stress because you don't know what's coming at
it's,
you.
Yeah, it's almost, you know, in the hands of babes, you know. But anyway, he turned this place into a real going, very good restaurant. And he used to close it down 2 weeks every year, 3 weeks every year, whatever it was, a month, and go to Italy. And he would go all through Italy just grabbing these recipes. And now he's basically making food like you would see if you were in Italy, not like the regular pizza places. You know, he's got a wood-burning oven. His dough is great. He knows what he's doing. And the pizzas are good. But I think the rest of the menu's as good, if not better. I mean, I had a great ravioli with stuff with ricotta cheese, some spinach, and a raw egg yolk, you know. And what they do is they, you know, they put the egg yolk in there raw, and as you poach the ravioli, it gets a little, almost like an over-light kind of thing, you know. So when you crack open the ravioli, the egg yolk becomes part of the sauce, and that was, you know, topped with a little prosciutto
it's
and truffles.
Intriguing.
Yeah, it's, they do it a lot. I mean, I've made them before. They're a pain in the butt to make.
And what do you call that?
It's called ravioli uvo. You know, egg is uvo, and, you know, in Italian. Everybody had pasta. There was a person, my friend's wife sitting across from me, she had a bolognese, which is made kind of in a traditional way, kind of, not really with tomato sauce, but just kind of a white bolognese. Two people had eggplant parm with spaghetti, and they said it was fabulous. I had the ravioli with the egg yolk, and my friend had ravioli that was stuffed with like a pork and veal stuffing, you know. Just right down the line, great. They had a little Brussels sprout salad in the beginning with like a balsamic vinegar. You know, as far as pasta goes, it was light because they don't, you know, they don't beat you up with heavy sauces and stuff. But the menu is really interesting. You should check it out. Even if you don't go, just check it out online. The place is called Grana, G-R-A-N-A, like the cheese. Fabulous little place in Jamesport. And now's the time to go because it doesn't get quite as busy. Although I was there Sunday night and the place was packed. It was full. Yeah, every seat was taken, you know, great stuff. So that ended my little soiree. That
interesting. Yeah. Well, it certainly sounds like a food and wine orgy, but nice. Kudos to you for putting aside some time for Tom and his friends.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm kind of off now. I'm on a semi-vacation, so I'm doing all kinds of shenanigans. You know, I went to Napa, and then, you know, I spent, you know, 3 days out on the North Fork, which, you know, I kind of live out there part-time anyway, but I don't get to do that so much, you know, because I'm with my grandkids or whatever, you know, I'm dealing with the restaurants. So it was nice to be a tourist out there, you know. And I'm going to sneak away to Portland, and I'm going down to Florida at the end of the month. So it's been a, you know, a haymaker kind of a vacation.
Very nice, very nice. So I have to ask you. You started talking about bread, and if I was getting very grassroots, very basic,
right.
I had some wine, and I had some baguette or some nice bread.
Sure.
What's the means by which to eat the bread? Do you eat it plain? Are you dipping it in balsamic or oil? Are you pairing it with a cheese? Or are you using a butter? Or all of the above.
Yeah, I would stay away from vinegar because vinegar and wine are mortal enemies, you know, as far as flavor profiles go.
Interesting.
But, yeah, olive oil is right there. That's great. You know, cheese is great. And, you know, the cheese depends on the wine, depends on what you're having, you know. It's not critical. I mean, I always say drink and eat what you like. Who cares, you know? But some cheeses pair better with things than others, you know. So, but I'm, you know, I like triple creams and, you know, things like brie and camembert and, you know, cheeses like that.
When you eat brie, you're going to laugh at me, but do you eat the crust or it's
I do, yeah. And what I like, you know, it's funny. I was talking about this with somebody the other night. We had, I was out to dinner with a friend of mine. She's a coworker and actually two friends. They're both coworkers. And the man is a little bit on the, you know, like uneducated wine side. He doesn't really know a lot. She's a little better than him. And I ordered an Alsatian Riesling. And I said to them, I said, you know, you're going to get a little like, almost like kerosene in the nose. There's a petrol thing that happens with Rieslings in France. And everyone, and I think it's a clonal thing, because every once in a while, there was one on Long Island that used to have it. Peconic Bay had it a little bit. And I've been told it's a winemaking flaw. I've been told it's part of a clonal difference and all this other stuff. I kind of like it, though. I think it's a, I look for it. I think it's a very pleasant thing, believe it or not. And it's the same kind of thing that happens with Brie and Camemberts. If you have a decent Brie and you spread it on your bread and you taste it and you swallow it and then you go through your nose, you'll get a little bit of an ammonia thing. I don't know if you ever experienced that or not.
No.
But it happens all the time. And I think it's, I kind of think it's probably in the crust itself.
Really?
Yeah. But I always get a very, very faint hint of that ammonia flavor through my nose. And I kind of like it. I mean, not that I go around snorting ammonia, but, you know, it's it's kind of a pleasant sort of after thing that happens with those cheeses. And, you know, on the other hand, you know, there's soft and like goat cheeses. They go very well with white wines, especially Chardonnay. You know, you have Catapano out there, which I think makes the best goat cheese in the country. And there are some, you know, some stiff competition cheeses out there, like, you know, Humboldt Fog is phenomenal, and Coach Farms goat cheese is phenomenal. So you have some great examples out there. There's another one, too, Moon something, Moon whatever. It'll come to me. But, again, you know, if you find your great cheesemonger, you know, they'll always let you taste something. There's a great cheese place in Manitouk on Love Lane called Love Lane Cheese, I think, or Manitouk Cheese, whatever it is. And if you go there, Michael, who's actually been on the show also, he'll always give you a taste of something. And you can go in there and mess around, kind of have fun. You know, taste this, I'll taste that. Obviously, don't do 30 of them, you know, but, you know, he'll taste, you know, four or five and, you know, different types of cheeses you can check out and see which ones you like. And it's a great, you know, you make a great cheese board. It's always fun to have that with wine. I think that, you know, that's a natural pairing. And, you know, all you need is, you know, a little bit of salami, some kind of a, you know, some kind of a sausage thing, a dried sausage on there, you know, a little bit of fruit, some nuts, you know, almonds are always good. Marcona almonds, if you've never had them, are fabulous with that. Some dried fruit sometimes, you know, apricot, raisins, you know, sun-dried cherries, a couple of different cheeses and some bread, and you got it. You know, it's easy to do. Fun way to enjoy wine, I think, and, you know, nice little crusty French bread or something.
Yeah,
and a slice
no question
of,
about it.
Doesn't get any better than that. And some olive oil.
So before we take a break and then get into a little bit of Valentine's Day, I love the interaction we have with our listeners.
Sure.
And Bill O'Leary sends us an email that it's actually very funny. It says John Sebastian and Playing with Fire. And then he goes into welcome back. And Bill goes, geez, I felt like a hibernating bear. So good to hear you back. So, again, we love hearing from our listeners. And, again, the way to communicate with us is fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. And I think we should take a break.
Yeah, well, before we go, we welcome all kinds of comments, recipes, ideas, questions, whatever you have. Give us a shout, and we'll do our best to get to them. So let's take a break. We'll sell some commercial space, and we'll be back in a little bit.
Attention seafood lovers. Check out FreshFinGourmet.com. You can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Goulot family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. And it's not just fish. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, and delicious pasta. Try their Italian sausage or veal rib chop. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packaging and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com. Specialty seafood delivered directly to your door with FreshFinGourmet.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's own food, wine, and lifestyle show with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
Okay, so Valentine's Day. Stu, ask me a bunch of Valentine's Day questions.
So here's the first thing. as I was saying, it seems to be like a grand slam this year because
sure.
you have so many days. But I actually, with clear thought, realized that smack in the middle is Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if many guys, if Sunday's the day that they have to be with their lady or ladies to be with their guy, does Super Bowl interrupt this?
No, Super Bowl is Valentine's Day for men, you know. And then I think that, you know, if you're caring about your guy, you know, you let him watch Super Bowl. You know, hang for the, you know, commercials. If, you know, now as many women as guys watch it now. It used to be one of those things where I would have these Super Bowl widow parties, you know, at the restaurant because the guys were all watching a game and the women had nothing to do, so they would come out to dinner.
I go into this game with mixed emotions. Obviously, part of Super Bowl is the halftime show.
Yes.
And it's been a lot of traditional rock in the past. And now it's morphed into a lot more popular music.
Yeah.
To the extent that this year, it's not necessarily my style of music.
Yeah, well, it's rap, right? I mean, Snoop Dogg and, you know.
You got Eminem.
And yeah.
I think Mary J. Blige. And
yeah, I think
stuff.
It's a rap thing. I guess they're trying to just, you know, cover all the bases or whatever. You know, you have a lot of different musical tastes out there, and you got 100 million people watching, so three of them have got to like rap, I would think, you know.
Wow, I thought you were going to start critiquing NFL for this Super Bowl choice, and you're
not my place. I mean, I like what I like. I would rather see, you know, a rock thing, but that's my choice of music, and I'm sure that there's people who would rather see a rap thing. It's their choice of music. I'm totally about choice. I'm okay with all of that stuff, you know. I think that, you know, is what makes a horse race. It's whether it's wine or
Cincinnati quarterback is like a real
he's a stud, that kid, man.
Yeah, I mean, he walks around with JB9 and bling on his neck, and he's wearing a fur coat like Broadway Joe.
Yeah, well, whatever. Hey, listen, you know, let them express themselves. Their kids having fun making all kinds of money playing a game that they've loved their whole lives, you know. You got to envy that to some degree. You know, if you can find, you know, I had a discussion with a friend of mine about, you know, retiring, and I said, you know, I don't think you ever retire from art. You know, I think cooking's art. It's like music, you know. Billy Joel's not going to stop playing music because he's 69 years old or 70, whatever he is. He's going to play until he doesn't feel like it anymore. And same thing with me. I mean, I still like being on the line, as sick as that sounds. You know, and I'm no spring chicken anymore, you know. But I can still keep up with the kids. In fact, most of the times I outwork them. But I still look forward to going to work every day. I really do. It's the oddest thing. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I found something that I was in love with when I was 15 years old, and it hasn't dimmed, you know? So I'm in my, I think I should get a golden gift from someone. I'm in my 54th year of this or whatever. It's a long time. I've had a long relationship with cooking and restaurants, and it's just been nothing but a blast. And I don't want to say I haven't had down moments. You know, you get those ups and downs for sure, but for the most part, it's always been a hoot, you know? It's always been a hoot.
So I want to throw Valentine's Day right at you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could share with our audience, if you were playing up to Jean and doing something special for her as far as menu for Valentine's Day, what would that be? And again, this is Tom Shawdell serving it up to her. And then what would be bliss for you as a romantic Valentine's Day menu served to you?
Well, if I was doing the thing for Jean, the great part about her is she will eat anything. You know, she has a Korean, obviously, you know, she's Korean, but she has that background. Her mom cooked that way. Her family's eaten that way their whole lives. And they have a much wider sense of, as children, a much wider like palette of foods than the average American. So, you know, kimchi is something that, you know, very few 6-year-old American kids are going to want to have. You know, it's you know, fermented cabbage. It's different. You know, so she has all these other flavors going on. So I would do something with her. I would probably start out with oysters because she's a big oyster girl. You know. And I would top them probably with some kind of a butter sauce and a little caviar. And then I would go to, I would probably do some sushi for her because she loves sushi, you know. It's a raw fish.
So, as I always do, when you guys do sushi,
yeah.
Do you do just traditional rolls that are fish or these productions that are rolls with all sorts of stuff on top, you know, and...
The place that we used to go to for special dinners with sushi was a place called Oya. And it's two words, O being the one word and Y-A being the second. And it's originally in Boston. It's still there in Boston, in the Leather District. And it was a restaurant that I stumbled onto, I don't know, I want to say 10 years ago or whatever, 12 years ago. And I just thought it was the greatest sushi restaurant I've ever been in my life. And it was run by an American guy, actually. And he was brilliant. I mean, I don't know where he studied. I don't know how he figured it out, but he did. And his stuff is great. And it's not silliness. It's not like mango sauces and fruit purees and all the stuff that you see in a lot of these places where they're looking to get, you know, different or looking to, you know, take it to another level. This is really well thought out. I mean, I'll give you an example. He does a nigiri with fried oyster and squid ink foam, you know, like squid ink bubbles. So he takes bubbles and he adds this additive to it. It's a textural additive that keeps it like viscous. And then he puts he'll take a fish tank pump and he'll take that tube out and put it into the squid ink, and it makes these bubbles, you know, like, because it's aerating, right? Like it would in a fish tank, you know. But the bubbles stay together and they don't pop because of this additive that he uses in there. I know what it is, and you can't really buy it in stores. It's called xanthan gum, you know. But anyway, and they come out and they'll take a spoonful out and they'll top it. And it's this bubbly mixture.
It's almost like a froth, it seems.
Kind
but bubbly
of, but more bubbles. More bubbles than foam, you know.
Right.
It's not foam, it's bubbles, you know, being the difference there. And it's just brilliant. And you get the flavor of the squid ink, which is, you know, marine-like, you know. And
a little very salty, a little musty.
Yeah. And it just complements the oyster perfectly. He does another thing where he'll take, like, banana peppers. You know, he'll make a relish out of banana peppers. And he'll put that on top of, let's say, madai or something along those lines, a little Japanese fish on and he'll do, you know, we get like a 28-course tasting menu, and it's all one bite, you know, stuff, but it's all brilliant. He does a foie gras nigiri with, like, chocolate and balsamic kabayaki, which is that eel sauce, you know. Just, I mean, and he serves it actually with an aged sake, almost like port. It's phenomenal. It's
so
like
pairing foie gras with sushi.
It's foie gras sushi. It's not paired with sushi. It is the sushi, you know. It's paired with that wine.
Well, what I mean is bringing something that I wouldn't normally.
Exactly.
I associate sushi with fish. So when you're bringing in, you know, like people that do duck or steak or whatever. So this is interesting.
It's fabulous. And so to answer your first question, when we do sushi, I tend to go sashimi and sushi. She tends to go rolls sometimes because, you know, she's a pretty big eater and, you know, has a good appetite. So that's a little more filling. And I kind of tend to stay away from the silly rolls, you know, the Ira roll with the cream cheese.
You mentioned sashimi and sushi.
Yeah.
So you're talking about layers of fish, sometimes just the fish, sometimes with a slice of fish laying on a piece of rice.
That's sushi. Sashimi is just the fish. It's no rice, you know. So... Yeah, that's the way we go. So I would give, that would be my second course for her, and then the third course would be some kind of fish that I would make kind of my way, you know. And in the fourth course, I give her some beef or pork that would have some kind of Korean element to it, bulgogi or maybe some gochujang or something, some kind of a.
Are there any dishes like pork and kimchi?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, or maybe a stew, a hot pot. She really likes those a lot, you know, where there's a broth there and, you know. And then she's not much of a dessert eater, but, you know, I could figure something out, you know. Probably something chocolatey, along those lines. Now, for me, the most romantic thing you can do for me is to buy me a new guitar. But that notwithstanding, I'm just an out-to-dinner guy. I still haven't lost it. That's the only thing, to the point of I'm becoming one-dimensional, but it's the only thing I really want to do anymore, you know, other than play golf. Well, you want to go to a movie? No. I mean, most of the movies I see are ridiculous. I don't want to, you know, shoot them up, bang, bang, cars turning over. It's not my thing, you know.
I don't see you being I think the term is rom-com, romantic comedy guy.
I'm not that guy either. No, I'm not that guy. But, you know, I can create my own romantic comedy because I can be pretty funny, you know, and we can go out to dinner and do that. That's what I like to do. I'd like to do that in a really high-end, crazy restaurant. I haven't been, high-end's probably the wrong word, but high-end as far as cooking talent goes, you know. One of those, I don't care where it is, wine country would be nice, go back out to Napa or something like that, and just, you know, create a memory rather than a, you know.
Hey, the world wants to know, what type of backyard does Tom Shawdell have?
Which one?
I guess out east.
Out east. It's a pretty big backyard. I have like an acre and a quarter of property out there, so it's pretty big.
I mean, is that a place you can go and take that loaf of bread and bottle of wine
can,
and
yeah,
just
yeah,
like
oh, yeah, totally.
Mellow out?
Yeah, if you got some mosquito repellent, you can. But my daughter's actually planted two gardens out there. I have two gardens, a vegetable and two vegetable gardens. One is primarily tomatoes, and so you got to kind of patrol those a little more than the others. And then the others, you know, zucchini is that and the other thing. So she's got that and all that going on out there, you know. But, yeah, it's kind of it's fun. It's nice. My front yard is actually nicer than my backyard because it faces the water, you know. I have I'm on a salt pond out there. So there's, you know, all the water creatures out there. I got, you know, swans and ducks and, you know, things. So it's
the front yard faces the water.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the deal. It's, you know, I love it out there. It's a different. It's a different vibe. It's a different feel. It feels more like New England than New York out there. And there's just something about the North Fork. You know, as much as I love the South Fork, and I do, I had a house in East Hampton for a long time. And I absolutely love East Hampton as a town. It's probably my favorite town on Long Island. And it became my adopted hometown for a very long time. And I moved out of there for a couple of reasons. You know, my business is on the North Fork. It was easier. It was getting a little aggressive out there for me. You know, it was getting crowded. And, you know, I didn't like the vibe anymore. So, you know, moving up north, there's things about the South Side that I miss. I miss, you know, friends that I have in East Hampton. I miss Stephen Talkhouse. You know, I miss playing there. I miss going to the beaches, the ocean beaches. You know, I miss Montauk Golf Course. But, you know, on the other side, now I have the vineyards and I have, you know, the bay, you know, which is, you know, 10 steps away. And, you know, I can go swimming in the bay and take the kids down. I don't have to worry about the riptides and all the other stuff. So it's got its own thing, and it's great. You know, my grandkids are living there now, and it's a great place for them to grow up. It's got a little bit of that Andy Mayberry thing, you know, that like, hey, how you doing kind of farmer mentality that you don't have up here anymore, you know. It's all gone.
So as we get near the end of the show, I'm going to tease with something, but I'm not sure I'm allowed to really give any details, and you might defer not to talk about it next week. But I understand Courtney might be involved in a very interesting project. And I ask before we leave, is that something we might be able to talk about?
Yeah, yeah. She taped a TV show called The Good Cook. And I think it's going to be on March 3rd at 1 o'clock, if I'm not mistaken. I think it's Channel 5, but you'd have to check. Yeah, she taped a little cooking competition on The Good Cook, which is exciting for her. She was nervous as hell. And I told her the first time is always nerve-wracking. You know, you just got to get through it, you know. I'm not going to help you so much. I mean, I'll give you whatever advice I can give you, but this is you.
It's
you
so funny. I was with a friend of yours, JoJo from Bagel Boss.
Love JoJo.
Who was in your building
yeah, yeah.
Where you had Kingfish.
Yes.
And I mentioned that something with Courtney, and he goes, oh, man, she's got that incredible line of desserts. I said, I guess for you, if only they were kosher, you might be able to partner with her.
Yeah, yeah.
But he misses you tremendously. He says the new place over at the building is good. A little pricey, but there's no Tom Shawdell associated with it.
All right. Well, hopefully he's still there, I guess, then, huh?
He's still in the building, and, yeah, he's doing well. He says to send regards.
Yeah, I didn't realize that it was – of course, I go into – you know, bagel boss one day, and you know, yeah, roast beef on a bagel. But the guy's looking at me like I'm out of my mind. You know what I mean? This is kosher. We don't have meat here. I said, oh, sorry about that. It was ham or whatever.
Oh, listen, you're not the only one. You can't believe how many people come in and go, I want an egg and
BLT
bacon
or whatever,
on a bagel.
I'm sure. You know. It's a great little place. He's such a good guy, Jojo, and he runs a great operation over there. I mean, you know, if you just forget the meat, it's fine. And you know, I love it over there because I was in Ben's twice last week, and I try and spread it out because I know it's not good for you, but I always have a mushroom barley soup, which is soul satisfying, and I always tell myself I'm not going to have a pastrami sandwich. I'm not doing it today. There's no way I'm not doing it. So now I've settled, I have a half a pastrami sandwich.
Okay.
And I feel like I'm kind of breaking even. But then I went back and I had the other half about 3 days later. You know.
So real quick, because we really are near the end, it's just really funny. Unfortunately, Kerry's mom passed away at the age of 95. But the Irish Catholic, they're into Jewish soul food because they were very, all they wanted were these deli and bagel platters. But it's funny, so I went to Pastrami King for my meat platters to get over to the family, but Kerry has this liking of Ben's stuffed cabbage.
Oh, yeah.
And just real quick, price point. This is an incredible story. So if you buy stuffed cabbage by the piece there, it's like $12 a piece of stuffed cabbage.
Yikes.
But if you get the stuffed cabbage dinner, you get two pieces of stuffed cabbage. It's like $23.99, and you get side dishes. You get two side dishes, you get coleslaw, and you get pickles. So you can't buy just one piece of stuffed cabbage you got to go for the real deal.
The whole bargain.
But it's just so funny. So I got the Pastrami King platter, wonderful. They have the best pastrami. And then I got the stuffed cabbage. They cut them into twos or threes or whatever. And this Irish Catholic family was munching on Jewish soul food. Go figure. But at the same time, in the meat platter was corned beef.
Oh, my God.
Irish and corned beef.
There you go. You know, it's funny. I dated a Jewish woman for years ago. And we always had this running gag about, you know, like, because the religions are basically the same. I mean, you don't eat, you don't kill, you don't cheat, you don't steal, you know. And they have these B-sides, you know, you can't eat meat with dairy, you can't eat meat on Friday, you know, so that's the only difference. So I said to her, we got to figure out who invented guilt and who took it to an art form.
Oh, that's obvious. Italians invented guilt and the Jews perfected it.
There you go. So,
that be said, then I'm sitting around with Kerry's family and the story of loaves and fishes real quick. There used to be a gourmet shop in Garden City called Loaves and Fishes.
Yeah, I remember.
Kerry's family used to always go to her mom and dad's every holiday, and one time I felt a little needy. I said, you know, it's St. Patrick's Day. I know you're going to have corned beef and cabbage. How about a little care package? She goes, she texts me, Stu, Loaves and Fishes. I go, Kerry, why are you texting me about the place we went in Garden City for the wine course?
Right, right.
She goes, Stu, Bible. I go, what does a Jew know about loaves and fishes in the Bible?
You're an eye for an eye guy. The Old Testament. All right. After that religious education segment, you know, Loaves and Fishes is still out east in Bridgehampton.
Really?
Yeah. She's a great lady, that lady. Sabine, her name is. She's a very talented woman, caterer. She has The Loaves and Fishes is a real good culinary store. You got all kinds of plates and knives, and you know, and she has a little hotel out there now at Bridgehampton.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, we're going to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life is Normal. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza, especially sex and pizza since it's Valentine's Day. Have a happy Valentine's Day, and we will see you next week.
And thank you, FreshFinGourmet.com.
Yes.
Attention seafood lovers, check out FreshFinGourmet.com. You can enjoy specialty seafood delivered directly to your door. Their seafood products are sourced from mineral-rich waters across the globe and are responsibly harvested. Family-owned and operated by the Gulo family, who began their legacy in the food business from their personal love for seafood. You can order sushi-grade octopus, squid, Chilean sea bass, wild Dover sole filet, and much more. And it's not just fish. They also offer premium meat, imported Sicilian desserts, desserts, and delicious pasta. Try their Italian sausage or veal rib chop. Get the fastest delivery and shipping in the business. And their attention to detail in both packaging and shipping assures freshness and quality. Go to FreshFinGourmet.com and see the vast array of choices for your special meal creation. That's Fresh, F-I-N, Gourmet.com. Specialty seafood delivered directly to your door with FreshFinGourmet.com.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized size desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shawdell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.